The Dolan White Podcast is powered by the Good Deeds app. Have you done a good deed lately? Download it today. Hey, it's Dolan White, and this is the Dolan White Podcast. My guest today is Ted Johnson, a 20-year Navy veteran and author of the book, When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I had honestly never heard of Ted before I had the opportunity to interview him about his book, but his book is super dope, and so is Ted. Seriously, he is spitting bars in this episode. So let me shut the fuck up and let's get to it. Welcome to the Dolan White Podcast.
Pull up,
Giddy.
Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolan White Podcast.
Episode 35 now of the Dolan White Podcast. My guest today, the author of When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America, Theodore R. Johnson. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Please call me Ted.
Ted, sure. Yes, absolutely. So the book is very intriguing. One thing you do well throughout the book is kind of use your family history to kind of tell your story and then to talk about where we are racially in the United States of America right now. So just touch on that for a minute. And then there are a couple things in the book that I absolutely love that I want to ask you about so you can kind of expand on. But let's talk about how you were able to use your family history in this book.
Yeah, it was so important to me to talk about an issue as contentious as racism and the values of America, not just in abstract terms, not just talking about theories and history and politics, but give it flesh and bones. And the best way I knew how to do that was to talk about my family's experience in America, from slavery in the 1830s all the way through to my military service that only ended just 5 years ago. And in that way, when I talk about the role that race plays in our society and all of the harms that racism has caused and all of the faith and optimism people have in America, it's not an abstract idea. I'm not just blowing smoke. I'm actually putting those struggles, those opportunities, those successes to the stories of my family. And so in this way, you follow characters in the book and understand the American journey through the lives of my family and not just academic arguments about what should be done and what's gone wrong.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is you were in the military, in the Navy, I believe, for, what, 20 years?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think racism within the military is really talked about a lot. Personally, I don't think you hear much about it. Maybe you do within the military construct, but outside, it's right. Not something. All we hear is, you know, thank you for your service. And what is the current state of race within the military right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So racism is absolutely there, but only because racism exists in the United States. Right. Whatever happens in the United States, you're going to find some of that in the military. But it is true that the military is one of the better institutions in muting the effects of racism. Its promotion system is considered one of the most fair in the country, but it's not perfect. We can look at who are generals and admirals and recognize that some folks get promoted more than others. But the military should be held up to some degree as a model for how people across difference are able to come together and work together and not demonize one another. But it's also a place that recognizes that without principled leadership, you can succumb to all of the divisive appeals happening in the country. The military is where desegregation first happened in the United States in the 20th century, when in 1948, President Truman desegregated the military by executive order. This is before Brown v. Board. This is before the Civil Rights Act of 64. So in some ways, the military got a head start on desegregation before the country did. But it's not that it figured it out. It's still struggling with some issues. Even things like how you wear your hair or allowable hairstyles shows that remnants of racial discrimination and privilege for some groups over others still exist there. But it is a good institution that I think has made strides over the last several decades to become a little bit more fair than we see in the rest of society.
One thing you really hammer on in the book is color blindness. I know I'm white and I have a lot of family members. I don't see color, but yes, you do. And that's not good to say that you're colorblind. So let's talk about that. Why is that so dangerous for people to say, oh, I don't see color?
Yeah, it's bad because then the idea is that the things to fix problems in our society, you just need one solution. and you apply it to everyone equally, and then you can all skip off happily into the sunset and say that we won in America. But we know from our history that the journeys of different groups are different. If you are the grandchild of Irish immigrants, then your journey to today is different than mine, where I'm descended from African slaves. If you are a Native American, then your journey is different from the descendant of Chinese immigrants who showed up in California in the late 19th century. And so to suggest that the challenges each of these groups face can be solved by one uniform solution that takes no race or ethnicity into account, none of our histories, none of our experiences, and just this one thing will solve the problem is just not accurate. The problem is that people think if we pay attention to difference, that what we're doing is setting ourselves up to be divided. And what colorblindness does is erase those differences. Mm-hmm. And now that takes away a tool that would otherwise divide us. And what I'm saying is that that's not how it works. In a society where racial hierarchy exists, where some kind of racism is present, if you don't address the specific needs of different groups in order to achieve equality, then what you do is perpetuate that inequality. And colorblind solutions do not decrease inequality. All they do are maintain disparities between groups because they give everyone the same thing instead of what particular groups need in order to move forward. So we don't have to choose. We actually can be both American and Black. American and white, American and Native American. We don't have to choose one identity to latch onto. It's difficult, but if we manage to figure this out, then we will have accomplished something that no other nation has, and that's create a multiracial, egalitarian democracy.
I love that answer, man. Another thing you're very strong on is education, and that's something that I was educated in Clayton County, Georgia, which is right on the south side of Atlanta. And what you learn about racism in school is there was slavery and Abraham Lincoln fixed it. There was a civil rights movement. Martin Luther King fixed it. And we're all good now, which is, I mean, obviously, we need a little more detail. So let's talk about that. What can the education system of the United States of America do to help curb racism?
Yeah. So the problem with the way we talk about American history now is that we only want to focus on the things we got right. So the Revolutionary War, we won't talk about how the founders ignored slavery. We'll just talk about how they got it right because they created this country where all men are created equal and, you know, and independence. We won't talk about how the only reason Lincoln waged war in the Civil War was to keep the Union intact and not because he suddenly thought Black people were humans. We're only going to talk about the fact that we won and we united the nation. And so in this way, American history becomes a collection of victories where we get to pat ourselves on the back about all the great things we did. And it ignores all of the failures, all of the times we've fallen short. But the real lesson in history is not just your successes, but also in the things you got wrong, because then you learn all of the things that led to your errors and learn not to replicate those things so that you can live better going forward. So the one thing we can focus on in our educational system is telling a fuller and more complete story of America. That means talking about the ugly bits, but not staying there. That means talking about our successes, but not staying there, but talking about those two things and drawing a line between them and talk about the progress of where we were and where we are today and the distance from where we are today and where we hope to be in a place that actually recognizes us all as equals despite our racial or ethnic identities.
I love that. And I think it's Germany, if I'm not mistaken, that they're from the time they go to grade school to the time they graduate, they learn something about, you know, the Nazi regime and the Holocaust every day.
That's right.
They learn the ugliness of it every day. And when you teach that, I think you're less likely to repeat those mistakes. So I'm totally on board with what you're talking about. And speaking of education right now, especially here in the South, critical race theory is a big point of contention. And I wanted to get, you know, your insights on critical race theory, because I believe they outlawed it here in Tennessee. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee now, and I believe they outlawed it here. I know Texas has been in the news recently for the same thing. So I think that's personally sad. I think that's awful to outlaw education in any form, but especially something as sensitive as race. So what are your feelings on critical race theory?
Yeah. So, look, the biggest thing is that most of the folks talking about critical race theory and how terrible it is don't actually know what critical race theory is. This is a performance that people are using in order to divide Americans because they get to gain and maintain political and economic power by dividing us instead of focusing more on the things that bring us together. if you are worried about critical race theory being taught to your grade school students, you don't know what critical race theory is. You have to be in law school or take a sociology class and, you know, post high school to be exposed to the actual theory. The other part of this is that folks think that critical race theory says white people are evil. Mm. America is racist and irredeemably so. Therefore, we have to burn the country down and start over again with equality. That's not what it says. It simply says that for different groups in our country, the climb to the American dream, the ability to realize the full rights and privileges of citizenship in our country, the path is different for different groups, and our history plays a role in that. Now, if you don't want to talk about the ugliness of our history and you only want to focus on all the beauty and the, you know, home, land of the free, home of the brave, fine, but don't deny our youth the opportunity to learn a fuller telling of our history and recognize the progress. We can talk about critical race theory, the 1619 Project, and not detract from the beauty of America. We can talk about how I would much rather be a black man in 2021 than in 1921 or in 1821. And that is telling a story about what black life was in 1821, in 1921, and today, which is a story of tragedy, but also of progress. And we don't have to run from that story. It's a beautiful one, even though it shows the times that we've fallen short. So the critical race theory, this is a bunch of elected officials that are trying to divide us over a non-issue in order to gain political power or, again, hold on to it, instead of finding the narrative that unites us and brings folks together.
I couldn't agree more with everything you just said about critical race theory. I think it's a good time to take a quick break, talk about our sponsor, the Good Deeds App from Michael Orr. Of course, Michael Orr is a former NFL great, Super Bowl champion, and the subject of the film The Blind Side. He has dedicated his entire life to helping people, and that includes developing this Good Deeds App, which basically helps people help people. That's all it does. It connects people that want to help with people that need help. So if somebody needs some furniture moved, a ride to school, whatever it is, that's what the Good Deeds App is all about. Maybe there's some people in your neighborhood that can't physically go to the grocery store. They need some stuff picked up. They're willing to pay for it, but they can't physically pick that stuff up. That's what the Good Deeds App is all about. It's about doing good deeds. And you can do that by simply downloading the Good Deeds App. Help people however you can, be it give it your time, your money, your effort, whatever it is you have, you can help other people with. Everybody has a certain set of skills. Your skills can help people, and you can get connected to the people that need that help with the Good Deeds App from Michael Orr. Have you done a good deed lately? Download it today. Now, back to Ted Johnson. Another term that you use a lot is superlative citizens. Explain exactly what that means and what that is.
Yeah, so superlative citizenship is a political strategy where citizens overperform their duties of citizenship, like paying their taxes or jury duty or serving in the military, et cetera, even when the state is in breach of its end of the social contract, where the state doesn't fulfill its obligations. So think of it like enslaved black people running away from their plantations to join the army during the Revolutionary War in order to fight for the nation's independence, and then being returned to slavery after the war was over. These are folks who knew, given their experience, that the nation was may not fulfill the things it says it believes in, like equality, like independence. It will ask you to fight for it, but then won't extend those things to you. And superlative citizenship says, not only did I help the nation achieve its objectives, but I extended myself in doing so, and the nation reneged on its promises to me. So superlative citizenship exposes the gap between who we are and who we say we are. It exposes the hypocrisy of a nation that says it values inequality and the protection of constitutional rights. And then when folks put their lives on the line for those very values, it then denies them access to those rights and privileges that they have fought for and earned. And so superlative citizenship demands the nation be better by exposing that it is not who it says it is, and calling attention to that gap.
I think everybody can probably feel that in that gap one way or another, because, you know, I pay taxes. I'm not happy with the school systems that I'm going to end up sending my daughter to. Right. I'm going to have to, if I wanted to go to a school system that I feel is better, I have to spend more money out of pocket when I feel like my taxes should cover that. Mm-hmm. And none of us really know where our tax money's going. Right. I mean, we pay it and we don't look away and we don't know where it's going to. But I feel like black Americans especially see more of that gap than literally anybody else. I do want to ask you before I let you out of here. Do you have hope? Racism gets better with every generation, but that shouldn't be good enough. It shouldn't be good enough. Well, it's getting better. I don't think that's good enough. It should get it should be better than right. rather than get better, right? So
that's right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm still hopeful, man. And look, and some of this is based on, like, I was raised in the Black church where faith and optimism were the tenets, the things in which the church grounded itself. I'm descended from a people who had faith and optimism while they were enslaved. Mm. And that's the thing that helped them get through the next day, was optimism that tomorrow might be a little better, or that the next generation might have it better. Faith and optimism during Jim Crow, like my grandparents and great grandparents, et cetera, they still maintained it. So I hold on to it. But here's what I also hold on to: a realization that not everyone has the same vision of America that I do. We can all say that we believe in equality and these unalienable rights, but their exercise of equality or their vision of equality means some people are a little bit more equal than other folks. So I'm optimistic about our values and principles. I'm optimistic that America over the next several years, decades, will be a little bit better tomorrow than today. The question that I'm not so sure about is whether we, this generation, is ready to meet the challenge in front of us. Or will we succumb to all the divisive appeals, all the ways people try to exploit tension in our country in order to hold on to power? Or will we meet the challenge in front of us and create a nation that's better than the one we inherited? I don't know the answer to that question, and the future of the country, frankly, depends on it.
Theodore R. Johnson, the book, Ted Johnson, my bad. Ted Johnson, When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America. Thank you so much for doing this. If you're ever in Nashville, make sure you look me up. If you have a speaking engagement, I would love to come and hear you speak as well. I think what you're doing is great, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
This episode of the Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by the Good Deeds app. Now, sometimes when we make donations, we really don't know where that money is going, but that is not the case with the Good Deeds app. The Good Deeds app directly connects people that want to help with people that need help. Now, I know a lot of times when we think of the word help, we think of money, but that's not always the case. There may be an elderly person in your neighborhood that needs help moving some furniture, or a college kid that needs a ride to work. You literally never know how much your good deeds can really make a difference in someone's life. So download the Good Deeds app and start making those differences today. Have you done a good deed lately? I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Ted Johnson, for coming on the podcast. Make sure you check out his book. It is incredibly dope. When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America. Definitely thank you for checking out the podcast. If you're listening on Apple, give me those 5 stars, write me a review, say nice things. I would definitely appreciate that. Whatever platform you're listening on, make sure that you're following or subscribing to the podcast. Definitely appreciate every follow and every subscribe that I get. And speaking of following, make sure you're following me on a gram as well, at DoloWite101, DoloWite101. Brand new episode drops next Wednesday. My guest, Dr. Shauna Jackson, the president of Nashville State Community College. We're going to have a great discussion about removing the stigmas of community college, because the cost of college, let's be honest, is fucking out of hand. Maybe community college should be considered more often than not. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Shauna Jackson next Wednesday. Definitely check that out. Brand new episode next Wednesday. That's it. I have nothing else to say. I'm going.